You know what really makes us mad? Is wasting money on CDs with only one or two good songs.
Yeah. Tell them about punk!
Everyone, and welcome to Punk Lotta Pod, the game where no one wins. I'm your co-host, Justin Hensley.
I am your other co-host, Dylan Hensley.
And this is the game where, using a number generator and the Rate Your Music punk charts, we pick one album and one EP at random to discuss. So,
Is it a game? It's a set of rules for a show. It's a formula.
We also really don't do lottos right on this.
Or keep a consistent lottery metaphor.
My original idea for the name of the show was Random Punk Generator. And then actually almost would have been more descriptive. And then, but whatever.
And then
too
I
late
put
now.
My spin on it.
Yes, so now we have a weird structure we have to barely adhere to. Yesterday turned out kind of interesting. To not segue smoothly. How does it start?
Remember Interpunk?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. You remember Interpunk? The place on the internet where you used to be able to buy punk records?
Well, you can buy them, but you won't get them.
Yeah, so Interpunk turns out is still around and also is a scam run by a crazy Trumper supporter.
Yeah.
So if you've been following us on Twitter, I made a post that basically pointed out that the owner of Interpunk is a crazy Trump supporter. His name is Bob Schermerhorn. He started Interpunk in 1997. He's studied meteorology at Linden State College, which is fucking weird.
Yeah.
And his Facebook page is real weird. It's also very public. So feel free to look at Bob Schermerhorn's Facebook page and judge his weird ass posts about gasoline prices and the inches of snow that they've received.
I mean, that makes sense. He studied meteorology.
I guess that part makes sense. And his progress as a bodybuilder and his hatred of GMOs and also his very racist anti-Obama screeds.
So he's like. I mean, he's like an InfoWars, like, conspiracy theory, like, GMOs are poison, like, crazy Republican, or, like, not even yeah. Republican, just, like, freaky libertarian.
Yeah, he could be a libertarian, but he proudly voted for Trump, and even a picture of him holding a bottle of Trump wine that he bought in Charlottesville, Virginia, by the way. And it really makes me wonder, he lives in Richmond? And he's apparently spent time in Charlottesville, according to some posts I've read. So I'm curious if he was out there for that. I wouldn't put it past him.
Have we outed the owner of Interpunk as a white nationalist?
I don't know.
Potentially?
I'm not going to go that far. Yeah. I'm not going to go that far. Yeah. There is some slander if you imply that. Allegedly.
I asked as a question.
Well,
I did not state as a fact.
He does hate Obama. He definitely calls him a Muslim and uses his middle name of Hussein a lot. So, you know, that's classic racism there. Very odd. But it also turns out he's a thief.
Yeah.
So I tweeted about it, and I tweeted at a few record labels to say, hey, did you know that the guy who sells your records is a crazy Trumper? And I tweeted a few specific labels and a few bands because I was like, I'm sure nobody really knows this. And then the Red Scare Industries Twitter responded and said that they found out about this after the election. The guy like wrote a crazy email about how Trump is going to make everyone rich. And so he no longer sells to them. I wish I'd known that a while ago. I mean, that was after the election and he got that email. So it's like, but then a few other labels responded, like Tor Johnson Records said that they're not going to send records out there anymore. He also said that he'll send them records and never pays them. So a lot of times when Tor Johnson sends records out there, it's just so people can see it as almost as a marketing tool that they're expecting to lose on. But I even tweeted at Asian Man Records, who responded and said they emailed their distributor to make sure they no longer service them. Which, I guess I'm going to retire from punk now. I think I've done my due diligence, and see you guys.
Well, and so many people have bought records from Interpunk and just like never received them, and they just get these emails that say, "Oh, we got these in stock; they'll be shipping out soon," and they never come. And people will ask for refunds, and they don't get them. And then one of our friends asked for a refund on an exclusive Alkaline Trio record, mm-hmm. and he got store credit.
Yeah, it's like nobody wants store credit. It's like,
this is useless. I'm not gonna get. If I spend the store credit, you're not going to send me anything.
Yeah. They have a habit of stringing you along for months and months and not giving you the thing that you paid for. So, obviously, they're hemorrhaging money, I'm guessing. They said he had to move warehouses not that long ago, and that was the reason why they missed a lot of orders. But it's like, a lot of people were also saying, bullshit, I ordered this in November, way before you moved. So, there's a lot of labels that still use them for, give them like exclusive colors of records. Like Masked Intruder has an exclusive color for them, and Alkaline Trio had an exclusive color. And I saw some tweets earlier from 2 weeks ago from someone saying, we still haven't got our Masked Intruder yet. So a lot of labels are sending him stuff. He's not paying them for it. So it's kind of fucked up.
If you have not been aware of all of this, do not order from Interpunk. Safely recommend that you don't do. So this is, and you may not have thought about it for a while. You may not even realize Interpunk was still a thing. But let's make sure everybody knows.
Yeah, I would just rather people know. At least be fully aware.
Buyer beware.
Yeah, and they rip people off. The owner's racist. So, there's a good reasons there to not order. Go order from Smartpunk. I've never heard anything bad about them. So, oh no, Smartpunk is a... I don't
know. No!
But yeah, tweet at bands or labels that you see who have kind of newer releases. There were a couple labels I tweeted at. Who was the one I responded to? Asbestos Records said they already have his records and they've already paid him for it, but he's not sending more there. So, which I'm curious as to... He's already severed relationship with Interpunk, but obviously Interpunk is going to sell the stuff because they have it, supposedly. But there's, a huge list of record labels, of, 200-something record labels that they have on the Interpunk page. And if a label you like is on there, tweet at them and tell them, hey, guys, I didn't know if you... Because some of these labels already knew that he was a thief and they weren't sending stuff anymore. But if, people like Hopeless does not need to be doing business with him anymore. Doing exclusive pressings through Interpunk anymore. So, let's make sure everyone knows it's, Interpunk fucked.
Well.
Yeah. Did you want to talk about your Craigslist hookup?
Don't say it like that.
You had some recent news on the Craigslist band formation. I don't know. How do you word this?
So it's just been me and this drummer for the last couple months, and it's we thought we had a guy, but now we don't have that guy for the bass. He came out one time and then just flaked on the next 2 weeks, and it
sounds like a bass player to me.
Yeah, it's not going to go anywhere, and I've gotten responses from people that have just been kind of lackluster. It's their expectations or what they want to do is something different. I had a guy who lives up closer to where the drummer lives who he played bass, but he's looking to be the lead singer too. So
no,
Nah, that's all right for you. So I kind of just was getting kind of bummed out. And then I revised the ad and re-upped it. And I also decided to kind of do some sort of A-B testing. Because right now my ad is posted specifically in the West Phoenix Craigslist. Because apparently, like, the Phoenix area is so big that the Craigslist is, like, actually broken up into West Valley, East Valley, South Central, some of the other outlying areas. So I was just like, let's just, like, post something really short and vague to the Central Phoenix and just see what kind of responses I get. And I've gotten two really promising responses off of that one. Potential guitarist, potential bass player. But I also went looking through my old emails to see if there was anyone that I had missed from previous postings. I found a guy that I don't know why I didn't respond to him. I just must have got it when I got a whole bunch of responses and his didn't get responded to. And so I just like emailed him and texted him out of the blue like a month later, pretty much. And he's coming out to jam Sunday. So
nice.
We might have our bass player. We'll see.
Yeah.
But it's
might have your player.
There's at least a few promising, smart looking people who might be a good fit. Hopefully something exciting, something official sooner than later.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much my update. Nothing else really going on.
Cool. Yeah, I guess then we can just dive in the show then. Okay. As usual, we like to take a look at, how do I word this section?
I thought you wrote it down.
I don't ever write this part down for some reason. Now I remember. So this week we got the year 2001. And as usual, we like to take a look at the Rate Your Music charts for that year just to see what some of the bigger trends and bigger albums there were. So 1, 2, and 3 are the same three bands that we see on the top five of literally every single page since, what, 1990? number 1 is Unwound, Leaves Turn Inside You. Fine. Number 2 is Converge, Jane Doe. Okay. And number 3 is Fugazi's The Argument. Unwound, Converge, Fugazi.
This is,
no matter what year it is, if they have an album that, if any of these three bands have an album released in that year, they will be at the top of the punk charts.
I always forget that Jane Doe came out right before 9/11.
Oh shit, like the week before. Yeah. And The Argument came out a month after.
Yeah.
Whoa. It's weird to think of Fugazi in post 9/11 terms anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this was like the last Fugazi record. This was the end for them, so.
Yeah. To me, they always were a 90s band, which is, yes, a majority of their records came out in the 90s, but it's just interesting to even think that they existed at all into the 2000s. Number 4 is Pig Destroyer, Prowler in the Yard. Cool. I mean, we've talked about, it's weird that Pig Destroyer keeps showing up at the top of these lists, but as far as grind goes, I guess they're one of the better ones. I'm not like, oh, turn this off, or like, you know, disgusted if I ever hear Pig Destroyer, but cool. Number 5, on the other hand, and number 7 is Page 99's Document Number 8 and Document Number 7. Number 7 is Number 7.
Number 7 is better than Number 8.
Ooh, hot take.
No, that's not a hot take.
I don't know. People act like Document 8's the best.
People who have only listened to Document 8. Document 5 and 7 are better than 8.
Well, not according to Rate Your Music.
Trust me. I have
Document 12's better than all of them.
So much Page 99. yeah, this year has got some really cool screamo stuff. There's further down the list, there's Interviews with David Frost by Majority Rule. There's a Jerome's Dream record. There's what else did I see? Oh yeah, right in between those two Page 99 records, there's All the Footprints you've ever left and The Fear Expecting Ahead by Envy. Pretty interesting, but
yeah. Early 2000s screamo is probably the last. Yeah, let's see. It was that early 2000s screamo scrams. Isn't that what they call scrams? Is that specific era?
I guess
whatever those early 2000s internet nerds were calling it. And then it kind of got co-opted by the Warped Tour crowd.
Oh yeah, I mean
the term got co-opted at least because, you know, calling My Chemical Romance a screamo, it's borderline. And then there was the revival starting probably with Lotus, like 2010. And
yeah, I mean,
there's even been like a recent trend of like newer bands doing like that Page 99 inspired screamo.
Well, I mean, this is kind of where this year and this time period is kind of where the confusion started to happen, because I mean, these Page 99 and Off Minor and Envy Records are all coming out the same year as Full Collapse by Thursday. What else came out to the next? There's a From Autumn to Ashes record. And in general, you've got metalcore really taking its mid-2000s form in this year as well. So everything is building up to the Hot Topic era of emo, screamo, metalcore.
It hadn't quite crossed over yet into that scene, but it's like getting ready to take its like first major steps in that direction.
I mean, there's that, we'll talk about it later, that brand new record.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of emo, lack of a better term. I don't know. There's that On the Might of Princes, which I feel like that's a retroactive. I hadn't heard of that band until 10 years ago, and definitely don't know anyone who was listening to them in 2001, so that's retroactive as hell. Jimmy Eat World's Bleed American, which...
Well, that's the mainstreamification of emo.
Yeah.
That's the most commonly pointed to.
And it's funny, because their record's barely emo anymore. Right. Like, it's just kind of...
It's a power pop, alternative rock record. It's
a great record, but it's definitely, yeah, like a power pop record. You know, it's super fun, alternative rock, it's great, but yeah. Because they came from emo is why it...
Saves the Day was kind of starting to shift in that direction to, as
yeah,
well.
They
Let's
had,
Stay What You Are.
They started pop punk, but then they leaned a little emo, and then they kind of just, like, straddled the line between those two. There's two Appleseed Cast albums that year. That's like straight up Midwest emo. Alkaline Trio's From Here to Infirmary.
Yeah, I was gonna say, look at the punk record. Like,
yeah.
From Here to Infirmary, Changes the Sound by Strike Anywhere, How I Spent My Summer Vacation by the Bouncing Souls, A Flight and a Crash by Hot Water Music. Those are some big records for punk. Idle Will Kill by Oscar. That's a great record.
Yeah,
and branching out a little bit, you've got a Rocket from the Crypt. Group Sounds and
there's Small Brown Bikes, Dead Reckoning.
But you also have, like, it's hilarious, you also have the mainstream pop punk records, Take Off Your Pants and Jacket by Blink.
Yeah,
there's a Sum 41 record.
Which one's that one?
I think it's on page 3.
Is that All Killer No Filler, or is that
yeah, it is.
There's a Sugar Cult.
Oh, there's
the Ataris. Yeah, is that the one with Boys of
that's
Summer
what I'm
on
looking
it?
At It is not.
End is Forever. Okay, it's the one before then. Like Flag Sticker on a Cadillac. And then even if you look at like the heavy music, their American Nightmares background music came out that year. There's a Bane record, Get Blood. There's an early Every Time I Die record. Zayo's self-titled.
Yeah.
Which I guess we could talk about our album. But, it's definitely an interesting year. There's a lot of the seeds of bigger sounds that define the decade, I guess.
Well, I mean, there's Further Seems Forever and The Places You Have Come to Fear the Most by Dashboard Confessional.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm curious to see where things get really weird. How far back? You've got your Christian hardcore rearing up for its big push, which we'll talk about a little more, I think, later. Ludacris, pre-Norma Jean. There's a one of the last... No, that was which Stretch Armstrong record? That's Revolution Transmission.
Revolution Transmission. It's like, yeah, it's in the middle. It's that one and the one before are the two that people still really love out of Stretch Armstrong. Bands would come and we'd all sing along, and we'd never know our impact would last so long.
I would have never thought that Stretch Armstrong been that impactful.
It's weird. They are though. I don't know if that's a regional thing. I mean, because we're we grew up in North Carolina. That's where I'm at now. And they're a South Carolina band. And people still have a lot of positive associations with Stretch Armstrong. Like, a lot of the other Christian hardcore from this time period doesn't quite have the secular love that, you know, a lot of other bands do. But, yeah, people still like Stretch Armstrong, which is fun. I mean, it's fun records, for sure. This is some weird stuff. Like, there's an Avenged Sevenfold record on here. Sounding the Seventh Trumpet.
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
That's the blow-up record for Avenged Sevenfold.
And it gets, yeah, about page five, it's weird.
The dingies and grade and integrity. Why is that integrity record so low?
I don't know.
Some weird stuff.
Oof. Ugh. Was that the first As I Lie Dying?
Beneath the Encasing Ashes. I want to say it's the first, because they do that, and there's like an... Well, there's our album.
Yeah.
This is a weird record on here.
Yeah, this page is so weird. Just going to hit some big ones. There's an Earth Crisis record. There's a Bleeding Through record. There's a U.S. Bombs record. Suffering and the Hideous Thieves. H2O.
Yeah.
Kill Your Idols. Suicide Machines. Red Animal War. Narcissus. Scrotum Grinder.
Ugh.
Yeah. So, do you want to jump in on the album then?
Yeah, let's do it. So, we got number 244 on the album charts. And it is Esocharis and their self-titled album, Esocharis.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Yes, it is. I listened to a podcast with Matthew Putnam to make sure. Right off the bat, this is not a 2001 record. This is a 1997 record that got re-released on Solid State Records in 2000. Esocharis were from Fort Smith, Arkansas. And this originally came out... This record is from 1997.
Holy shit.
It was recorded in 97. Released on Dayglo Records in Scandinavia in 97. And in the United States, on Seize the Day Records, which... is run by Bruce Fitzhugh of Living Sacrifice, which is entirely why this album got a Solid State re-release. Also, it totally ruins this thing. If you look at Radio Music, this album is listed both times in 97 and in 2001, and it's the same album.
It's listed in 98.
Yeah, somebody messed up. That's 97 as well. I listened to a podcast with Matt Putnam, specifically said that's when. Also, Discog says 9. So... yeah, 1997. That kind of changes how you view this
that
record.
It changes everything. This predates Where Blood and Fire Bring Rest by Zao, and I wanted to specifically mention that record because I was like, oh, wow, they were definitely into Zao because there's some like major Brett Dittar-style guitar playing on here. They did it before Zao.
Yeah, yeah. So... 1997. Oh, man. Okay. Let's talk about the personnel real quick, because that's going to be a factor. So, the personnel is Corey Putnam on vocals and guitar, Jason Holmes on guitar, Arthur Green on bass, and Matthew Putnam on drums. Corey, Arthur, and Matthew would all go on to join Living Sacrifice, who were also an Arkansas band. This record was produced by Bruce Fitzhugh of Living Sacrifice. Bruce even paid for the recording. Barry Pointer recorded the record. He recorded half of the Tooth and Nail Solid State heavy records at this time, specifically Zao's Blood and Fire Bring Rest. So, Corey would later go on to front Norma Jean, starting with Oh God, The Aftermath, replacing Josh Goggins, and Matt would later play Love Drug and Unwed Sailor. So, Dayglo Records in 97 also released Blindside's first record in Scandinavia, and they also did the European pressing of Staesaker's Speakeasy. All that being said, this record is ahead of its time for 97, sort of.
So, okay. When I was listening to this, I got major Zao vibes, I got major Living Sacrifice vibes, I got a little bit of Snapcase, maybe a little Shai Hulud. And if you put this within 97, that makes perfect...
That doesn't make any sense.
No, that makes perfect sense.
When's the first Zao record?
Well, this predates Blood and Fire, but if you... if you look at this in the context of hardcore in 1997, you have Progression Through Unlearning by Snapcase. You have Songs to Fan the Flames of Discontent by Refused. You have Samsara by Catharsis. Reborn by Living Sacrifice. Hearts Once Nourished with Hope and Compassion by Shai Hulud. This Aso Karras record fits perfectly.
And here's my favorite. Here's my favorite little bit. 1997, Coalesced, Give Rope.
Right. Advent of a Dillinger Miracle plans, by Strong Arm.
Dillinger Escape Plan's self-titled EP. Botches split with, Nine Iron Spitfire. Jesuit's self-titled EP. Knut's Leftovers EP. So, like, I specifically was looking for Mathcore records. And they... Aso Karras is contemporaries with Coalesce and Botch. They are not... I mean, they may be kind of knocked off. But they were doing it at the same time those bands were. And then they broke up in 1998. While on tour in Europe. And then they came home, recorded a two-song 7-inch. And then didn't do anything until 2002, where they played Furnace Fest.
And you mentioned Botch. Them being contemporaries with Botch. This is better than Unifying Themes.
Ooh, bold take.
It's not as good as American Nervosa, which came out in 98. But mm-hmm. Yeah, this is them doing Botch better than Botch. Knocking off Botch before Botch became the band that everyone knocked off. Poor less not as well. So
yeah. Yeah, so it's so hard to look at this record. Like, you have to look at it in 97's lens because that's when it was recorded and when it was released originally. But they were like, they didn't do much. Like, they are only around for a couple years. They didn't tour super extensive, ended up breaking up in Europe. They were friends with Living Sacrifice, and that's why this record even exists in the first place. They all wound up playing in Living Sacrifice, and then a few years later, Living Sacrifice is winding down, and Norma Jean takes off. So, what I don't understand is why, in 2001, did Solid State Records decide to release this record? As far as I can tell, it's barely... There's nothing really different about it. I don't think they remastered it, especially, for this... For 2001. And... Trying to see what else came out in 2001 from Solid State. So, Embodiments Hold Your Breath, which is one of their first hard rock records. No Innocent Victims, Tipping the Scales. Ludicrous, which we mentioned earlier, Throwing Myself, which is the other pre-Norma Jean band, which it's pretty much all the same guys who wound up coming Norma Jean, right?
I think so. It's maybe like one member difference.
Actually, there's a lot of records in 2001 from doing that. Stretch Armstrong's Revolution Transmission, Soul Embrace, This Is My Blood.
No, right. Ludicrous was everyone from Norma Jean. It was Josh, Scotty, Chris, Josh, and Daniel. It was just on that album, they still had Mick Bailey on Turnton samples.
Mm-hmm. Zayo self-titled. 2001 was a really big year. Tooth and Nail Soft. Anything else? Yeah, that's the heavy records. So, is this post-Hammering Process?
No.
Yes, Hammering Process came out in October of 2000. Oh, I meant for Solid State's release.
Oh, yeah.
So, that has to be the reason why. Because half of Aso Karras plays on the Hammering Process. So, more than likely, it was Solid State going, you know what, let's get a couple more bucks out of this. We'll license this record from Bruce Fitzhugh himself.
Yeah.
And make a couple dollars using... I wish I could find a sealed copy of Aso of this record to see if there's a sticker on the outside that says featuring members of Living Sacrifice.
I'm sure it did. Yeah, that seems like exactly the reason that they would put this out. They'd be like, oh, this is actually a really good record that all these guys from Living Sacrifice played on in 97 that no one cared about then.
looking at a 97 lens, this is way ahead of its time, and actually there's a lot of the clean guitar tones totally make way more sense.
Right.
Because that's the weakest part of this record.
Well, in the extremely 90s hardcore bass playing.
Yeah.
And then there's even like a Silver and Blood Neurosis kind of tribal drumming feeling to some of these songs.
Yeah, that definitely comes from Matthew Putman's playing, because Matthew Putman's a phenomenal drummer. It's wild. This is such a weird record to look at. But to be honest, I'd be happy with just 4-song EP and be done with
it. It is a little long.
It's not even that long. It's it's like 30 minutes long, and that's including the bonus track at the end, which is, you know, one of those hidden by silence Spotify cuts the silence for you. So it's really 8 songs, really an EP. It's like probably like 28 minutes long, really. But there are 3 amazing songs in a row. The Narrowing List, Spirit of Revival, and Dunamis. Yeah. Doing a sweet 360 Dunami off the half pipe. Those 3 songs together make this record. And you could pick a 4th song, and then you'd have just a 4-song EP that fucking rolls. There's a lot of songs on here that are just kind of like, eh, it's fine, it's whatever. It's more of the same.
Yeah.
I don't hate them, but it's just, they're not super standout tracks. And I'm trying to think of which the first song I heard by them was. Oh, you know what? The first song I heard by Ace was on that DVD from This Is All State Volume 4. It was the live footage from Furnace Fest.
Yes.
That featured Josh Goggins doing guest vocals on Spirit of Revival. And at the time, my first exposure to Norma Jean and Ace O'Karis, I was like, these bands suck! Because those Furnace Fest recordings are ass.
Yeah, they were not good.
The vocals are way too loud. Like, they're louder than anything else. And so it kind of messes with it. Scoggins' voice doesn't sound great. He was probably like burnt out at his point. And that's what made me think I didn't like Norma Jean. That and the song Face Face, which looking at it now, I like the record. But then I didn't. I don't know. I needed to hear the rest of the album to really understand the context of the song and everything. But yeah, at the beginning of that video, I think Corey says, 238's playing right now. Go away. Go watch them instead.
Yeah. No. No one needed to see 238.
Hey, Chris Staples still going, man.
Yeah. It's still just so all right.
It's a weird record. I felt like I had to keep turning it up. I think that's an issue with early 2000s heavy music. Like, they were all starting to use digital recording. Well, that doesn't make sense because it's a 97 record, so it's still hard to...
I mean, it's mixed. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of... Everything just kind of gets a little mushed together.
Mm-hmm. And Corey's vocals on this album are a little shriekier than they would be in Norma Jean. The thing that I thought of while listening to this record was Corey kind of sounds like a Tress MacNeille character screaming on The Simpsons. Like the, oh God, no! It's a very difficult voice to mimic. Because, I don't know, it sounds like he's really screaming on some of those.
Yeah, I mean, but you can tell it's him. I mean, you put a little more age on it more control.
Cigarettes.
Yeah, and you get the Oh God, the Aftermath voice.
Yeah, you can hear it, especially watching the live video. You can hear it there, too, his lower notes. And then, like, Spirit of Revival is a huge song. Like, it's like the star of this record. Which may be the first studio recorded song I heard from them on probably a Tooth and Nail compilation. That 10-year box set maybe was the first time I heard it. It was either that or them 3.
So, I'm reading a review from like 2002 where someone says, add 8 members, dress them all in boiler suits and disguise their identities with horrifically gruesome caricature masks of the 12 disciples, and Ace O'Karis could be onto a winning formula. Of all the solid state bands, they are the first to sound, whether intentionally or not, uncomfortably like a Christian parody of Iowa's most infamous sons, Slipknot.
What? No, they don't. What are you talking about?
There are some moments that kind of fall into a little new metal-y sound.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, there's some moments that I could see that. I think it's funny you said eight members. I want to say at some point I read somewhere they did have eight members. I don't know if it was during that.
Well, that's basically what Living Sacrifice was at that point.
That 2000s reunion thing they did. I read something that said they had like eight people on stage at some point. So I'm assuming maybe some Ludacris guys came out and maybe some Living Sacrifice people came out.
Any other thoughts or info on this record?
Not really. The only... I don't know. I don't really have much more to add to it. This will be interesting. What would you rate the album?
I want to say a 4.
Just a flat 4?
Yeah. I got a real kick out of listening to it, because it has been a long time since I've listened to it. I know I've heard this album before, but it was just really interesting to listen to this record and feel like I have a better grasp of hardcore history, which apparently this album kind of throws things off a little bit.
Yeah.
Knowing that it was originally from 97. So it was cool to be able to point to all the little things that I hear, the little, you know, the Coalesce, the Snapcase, the Zao, the, you know, even the little Deftones.
Oh yeah, there's definitely some swirly
guitars.
Yeah, there's definitely some Deftones. I definitely got that vibe. I want to say maybe the song Skimmers, or there's a couple of tracks. I personally didn't really care that much for the last two tracks. They were okay, and I didn't love that processing. So I'm going to give it a 3.75. There was just enough for me to be like, and that didn't really do it for me. It kind of like weighed down the three absolutely killer tracks. I mean, I can definitely see myself coming back to it in the future if I ever in the mood for it, because there's a lot here to enjoy. Especially knowing that it's a 97 record, like comparing it to other records from the era. If anything, I'll just probably wind up starting with Narrowing List, do Spirit of Revival, and stop after that. It's a good record. It's interesting. It's definitely interesting, especially if you're curious about where the seeds of Norma Jean begin, what a contemporary of Coalesce and Botch are going to sound like. Well, you ready to talk about our EP?
Oh boy. Mm-hmm. Not really, but I guess we have to.
Oh, God. So, our EP is number 127.
Too high.
And it is Taking Back Sunday and their self-titled EP.
Thank you.
up front, right off the bat, this is a trash album.
Self-released. Long Island, New York, which I didn't know they were New York.
Yeah.
So, tell you. All right. Right off the bat, personnel. Antonio Longo on vocals. That's right. It's not even the main guy that sings on all the other Taking Back Sunday records. Stephen DeJoseph on drums. Eddie Reyes on guitar. John Nolan on guitar. And last and certainly least is Jesse Lacey on bass.
Ooh.
Jesse Lacey of Brand New fame and Sex Criminal fame. Piece of shit.
We don't talk about him anymore.
So, well, I wanted to mention this part. Apparently, John Nolan, quote unquote, romanced Jesse Lacey's girlfriend, and he quit the band and started Brand New. So, thanks a lot, John. Because of you, we get Brand New. But then at the same time, the lead singer Antonio Longo left the band, and then Adam Lazara had been brought in to play bass in Taking Back Sunday, replacing Jesse Lacey. And then after Antonio left, then Adam switched. So in all reality, Taking Back Sunday just would have become Brand New.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have got fronting it, but I do like Nolan romanced his girlfriend? I'm not even sure what that means.
He romanced
That's what the Wikipedia... I don't know, did he just hit on her? Did they, like, actually fool around or something? Like, what happened there? But, I don't know. Fuck Jesse Lacey. Done with it. Did you know Adam lived in North Carolina before?
I was about to say that. I knew that, and I always forget that.
But he's not even from North Carolina. He's from Arkansas or something like that, or Alabama or something like that.
You told me before I listened to this EP, because I said something like dreading listening to it, and you told me that thankfully Adam isn't even on this EP.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I kind of wish he was. I think it honestly would have made it that a little bit better, which is saying something because I cannot stand him as a vocalist. But
no,
guy who sang on this album.
He sounds like he's asleep.
So bad. It just was, it was just like sleepy, mainstream, like butt rock vocals.
He
sounds like fucking like Three Doors Down or something, but worse.
I was just like kind of surprised at how boring this was. Because I actually expected it to be more like the other Taking Back Sunday records that I don't like, but they're at least memorable. Man, this guy's voice is like...
So, this EP overall sounded more like Brand New to me than Taking Back Sunday. Which makes me wonder how much that turd really had to do with the sound of this band.
Well, as far as I know, John Nolan, like one of the few members of the band, and even actually Eddie Reyes like left the band and came back. So, like the guitar players are for the most part on most of the Taking Back. Weirdly, Eddie Reyes was in the band The Movie Life.
Yeah.
It's like, why didn't you stay in that band? I'd rather listen to generic pop punk than this shit. And then John Nolan also did the Stray Light Run.
Right.
And then that's before they got Color Fred and what was his name?
Mascherino? Fred Mascherino?
Yeah. And Lazar. And I think they even have different drummers. I don't know. Taking Back Sunday.
So, Taking Back Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Not a band that I ever liked.
Nope.
No nostalgia whatsoever. And Taking Back Sunday, I was thinking about this. They're one of those bands from that era, like one of the big ones from that era, that to this day I can't find any redeeming qualities in. Because it's we kind of were surprised a little bit by that first My Chemical Romance record and just what I have heard of My Chemical Romance since the mid-2000s, I'm like, there was actually some good parts of that band.
Yeah, they weren't as bad as my memory.
And even like Fall Out Boy, who I really don't feel very much nostalgia for or appreciation for, like, I don't know, it was a beat. It could be fun, but everything I have heard from Taking Back Sunday was just like painful.
they were one of the bands that we would watch on Fuse, Steven's Untitled Rock Show, and then just talk shit about nonstop. We hated them so much that we thought we hated emo as a genre. And really, what we really hated was Warped Tour emo or pop punk from that era.
Yeah, sexist teenage boys.
Yeah, yeah.
Making new metal pop rock.
We're the sensitive ones of the new metals. Originally, I was going to say 2001 was ground zero for pop punk emo, and then I was like, oh yeah. But I didn't realize that Dashboard Confessional put out his first hit. Chris Carrabba put out the first Dashboard Confessional record. Something Corporate put out an EP. Bayside had an EP. It's like, this is the beginning of snoozy, misogynistic, Warped Tour, pop punk, AP, alt press, just that gigantic wave of bands that influenced what everyone thought punk was for a decade.
It's one of them.
And in turn, in screamo and emo. Like, these bands are responsible for redefining three genres or three subgenres and making everyone else have to dig their way out of a hole.
So
yeah,
I don't want to fall too much into a hate emo. Like, I did enough of that as a teenager. I wanted to look at this, and I barely want to even talk about this EP because honestly, I just feel like this band in general, it exemplifies so much about that genre, that style, and subgenre, and culture that I feel like there's so much more that you can talk about just using that as a starting point. I wanted to extend some sort of olive branch, I guess, to that era of music, which I find very unpleasant, by saying, for all of its downsides, it changed the face of punk rock so drastically that everything that we like now that came after is, like, you can't separate it. Like, it was influenced either in reactionary ways or in just as an extension of that sound. And, like, it's impossible to separate punk from punk in 2019 from this.
Well, punk in 2019 is also a very strange creature. There's very few standout punk records in the last 3 years. And the ones that do only stand out. We listen to tons of punk and newer bands and stuff like that, but not a ton of it gets a lot of mainstream press or attention. And then the only punk bands who do tend to be like a throwback of some sort, like a 70s or an 80s throwback. But then at the same time, there is a shitload of pop punk bands that are putting out records every single day.
Yeah.
Who are appealing to a much younger crowd, the people who grew up on Warped Tour or, you know, aspired to Warped Tour. I don't know. I'm more of a fan of the reaction to this type of...
Well, yeah. So, I mean, but you have to think about all of the noisy hardcore bands that branched out from Math. The more straightforward DIY hardcore bands that reacted to metalcore in general, this super slick and polished, you know, how many big hardcore bands now were motivated to in some way, like, get punk back on track, I guess.
Well, there was definitely a big tribalistic thing going on with metalcore kids and emo kids, because it was definitely
and then
real fucked up shit going on there too, but
you know, all the emo bands that wanted to do real emo or revive emo revival or Midwest emo or whatever, like that mm-hmm. came after the mainstream emo, like they got into Midwest emo because they were listening to Warped Tour Hot Topic emo. And then they went mm-hmm. branching out into these all the bands that influenced those bands, mm-hmm. and where the term emo comes from. So, you know, if it weren't for Taking Back Sunday, you know, there would be no Midwest emo revival.
Revival, yeah. I mean, it also, it pushed like the orgcore
right
punk low, like down to a more DIY sense. Like, it basically pushed them out of them.
Well, so music like this, like Taking Back Sunday getting popular, led to a broader range of punk bands getting popular. The Alkaline Trio and Hot Water Music getting, you know, signed to bigger labels and being on Warped Tour with these bands, you know. So that brought more attention to that, what you would consider DIY or core authentic punk or whatever, in a lot of ways. I mean, you and I mean, for that matter, I mean,
yeah,
you know, we listened to Warped Tour compilations and...
Yeah, and they would get to the point where I'd be like, I don't like any of these songs, but these three... Yeah.
And you would meet people, you know, you met someone who was really into Alkaline Trio, and you got into Alkaline Trio, and you got into Coheed and Cambria, and you got, you know. So it's one of those things, like, it emo and punk had to go through its big Hot Topic phase for for us all to have the version of emo and punk that we have.
But there, that phase also never fully went away, because the Warped Tour crowd and Hot Topic crowd are still there, and they are still making music, and they're all sleeping with teenage girls. And...
Well, that's, like I said, there are some plenty of downsides.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I remember when I realized, I was like, oh, I can like bands in a genre and not just outright dismiss the entire thing. I remember, like, telling people, I was like, I like emo now. And them going, being shocked that I would say that, because I had built up this, I don't know, bullshit persona of emo sucks, which is the same as saying disco sucks in the 80s. So, I mean, and there's definitely something else underlying there, which we have talked before. As far as some form of homophobia going on there.
Well, and that was one of the other things I wanted to say about, as misogynistic as many of these bands could be, they did give a platform and a mainstream appeal to not like really aggressively macho masculinity. Yeah. And, you know, I think in a lot of ways it did open people up to other gender expressions.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you know, the flat iron hair and the guy liner. And it's nothing and new.
I mean, we've always had glam. You know, I mean.
Yeah, right. But it was the next wave for the next generation.
Yeah, and
teenagers who were like, wait, I don't have to wear gym shorts and camo
and
tees?
I think it was less like, I'm a sexy freak, and more like, I just like to look this way, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right, there was a little bit of an outfit, like a costume that went into it too. But look, every scene has that with teenagers, 20-something. It's interesting, but we also saw the backlash of bands who were in that scene with the girl pants on studded belt, and then they changed their style as soon as the style was no longer popular. They fell out of the fashion because they were only in it not because that was how they were truly wanting to express themselves, because that was the scene costume they had to wear to be taken seriously, which in turn made other people not take them seriously. I don't know. Is that still around today? Do you think younger people today give a shit about that kind of stuff?
What do you mean? Like the
scenes and tribalism and, like, I don't know, making fun of other people for, oh, you're an emo, you know, like that kind of thing.
It doesn't seem as strict. I mean, you certainly do have your metalheads and your goths and you still have people who wear a uniform, basically a subculture uniform, but by and large, kids today seem to just be normal. Like, they just kind of seem to all be mostly into the same things.
Yeah, I did read some recently that was basically saying that as far as music is concerned, a lot of people are listening to more people are listening to the same music than they used to, because thanks to the internet, everything is so, like, tailor-made for your specific tastes that music is like the one area where people are like, well, let's just all agree to listen to this so we all have something in common to talk about. Because we have, we've been raised on YouTube algorithms that, you know, are designed to put us in little, like, a teenager today's in-jokes are going to be so hyper-specific now that it's, no one's going to get them. And so music is like one of the few things where people are like, yeah, we like that. We all like that, right? And everybody kind of agrees with it. It's not as, and that may explain why there aren't so many punk records anymore. Like, they're not as many as there, I mean, there are because of the subgenres, but the definition of what a punk band is very wide now. And there aren't so many playing specific styles. I don't feel like there's not. Or at least there's just not as many punk records where people are like, yeah, we're all into that. Whereas pop music, it has turned into that. I don't know.
Well, anyway.
We got real big with that conversation.
I didn't want to talk about EP. It just sucked.
Well, what do you want to give it? That's not a number.
I give it a barf stars. Ugh. Like a one. Honestly, it made me feel bad listening to it. Like, it's funny. Just...
I didn't really... Ugh. Okay, you're going to be a little surprised by mine.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a 2.75.
Wow. Why?
It didn't bother me. It just was just there. Like, it was just a thing. I thought they played their instruments well enough. I thought one or two of these songs was perfectly mediocre. Like, you know, I couldn't give it... I couldn't just be like, this is... garbage. It's like, it's not good. It's not bad. It's not especially bad. I wished it was especially, because it'd been a little easier, but I felt nothing listening to it. Like, I was just like,
I felt trapped listening to it. The only enjoyment I got out of it was the song where it sounds like he's singing buttholes. Buttholes in the rain.
I don't even
gotta wash them clean.
At all. There was one song that I thought
it made me think of what's his name on Good Place. I'm in my butthole. Well, you clean out my butthole when I'm gone. Oh, butthole.
Jason. Yeah. It might be our cousin there. That or a screaming Chris McNeil. There was one song on there that was like, you guys ripped off Coheed. Like, it has the phone ringing, and it's got, like, the like a music box almost going on. It's like, this is a song on a Coheed album.
When did that one come out, though?
Which one's that one?
Because if it's The Ring in Return, that's on...
Is that in Keeping Secrets? That might be in Keeping Secrets. That's the second one. That might have been after. Yeah. I don't know what year.
2000-something.
Yeah, I don't know. I was writing my notes as I was listening to it, so maybe that's why I didn't feel especially trapped. But I had tried like 3 times before to start it, and I was like, no, I'm not ready yet.
That's kind of downgrade your rating. It took you 3 tries
to get to even press play.
Okay.
I hadn't even listened to it yet.
Well.
Oh, you know what? I'll take. Let's penalize it for having a sex cream, I guess. Yeah. let's give it a. Fuck you, don't listen to this, because why?
Yeah, I mean, there's really, really no reason to listen to this. If you're a big Taking Back Sunday fan, you've already listened to it.
And you probably didn't like it. You didn't have mopey vocals. It's bad. I mean, yeah, it's not good. I'll downgrade it to a 2.
There we go.
If you take out Jesse Lacey, I'd give it a 2.75, but with Jesse Lacey, it's a 2, I guess.
Yeah.
If they were better judges of character.
Instead of romancing each other's girlfriends.
Yeah.
What are we doing next week?
Next week, we are doing the year 1997. And we are doing number 122 on the album charts. And it is Tuesday and their album Freewheelin', which is pre-Alkaline Trio. And we are doing, our EP is number 48. And it's Cleveland Bound Death Sentence's self-titled EP. And that is not pre- a side product of Dillinger. Yeah. So,
speaking of Dan Andriano, I found a used copy of his last solo record just the other day.
Party at Jason?
Yeah, which I was really stoked to pick that up. It's like $10. Nice. I love that record. Nice. That's one of my favorite.
Yeah, that record was rule.
That's probably one of my favorite records of the last 5 years.
I like that record. I like that record more than yeah. Hurricane Season, the one he did before. It's definitely, I think it's the best side project for Flying Trio, too. I probably like that record even the Tuesday, maybe. I have to listen to it.
Yeah, it's been a while since I listened to Tuesday. Yeah. It'll be fun.
Yeah, well, continue to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at PunkLottoPod. We have an email address, it's punklottopod.com. And we have a website, it's punklottopod.simplecast.fm. Check it out and tweet at record labels that still sell their stuff on Interpunk. Let's try and get Hopeless to stop selling records to Interpunk. So, alrighty.
Oh, brandishing your buttocks is only getting me angrier.
I want to see what's going on.
No, Mother, don't look out the window. Ugh.